So I think we were talking about, like, Buddhist ideas of karma and retribution and what happens with actions. So why are certain people born in this situation versus this other situation and things like that? And I remember asking just a very poignant question about that idea. Like, what do you think about karmic retribution and that idea? And she was just sitting in the car. We were crossing the Golden Gate Bridge when she got this really funny look on her face. And I waited, and I was trying to be patient. And after about 3 minutes, I was like, are you thinking? And she was like, yes, I'm thinking it over. And I was like, okay, we'll just change the subject. And then 3 days later, or maybe it was 2 days later, she came back and she said, so I've been thinking about that question. And that was how it used to be, like a 2 day delay on like thinking about stuff. And now she's really with it in terms of like her ideas.
Because I think you just like grow up thinking certain things or having been taught certain things. And it was like, wait a minute. Okay, I guess I need a little bit of extra time to really think. Like, what do I think about this? Or how do I feel about, you know, whatever?
We were fixed up.
We were living in Oakland, and two friends, they'd been trying to get me to meet Rhonda for a long time, and I was like, okay. And finally I said, okay, all right, I'll meet her. And we're going to go to Lake Chabot, which is a reservoir in Oakland that you can go canoeing on.
Hayward.
Up in the hills there. And so I walked in the house, we went in, I arrived at Kate and Paula's house, and I'll never forget it. I walked in the door, and there was Rhonda, and I saw her aura. All about this far, she was bright, like light magenta pink, and really soft. And I remember going, she's so soft. That was my first, she's so soft. And we said hello, and it was a really nice day.
She was teaching at Tahi at the time, which is in Richmond.
El Cerrito.
So I said, sure, yeah, I'll meet her. So they fixed us up. We went canoeing at
Lake
Chabot.
We kind of interviewed each other.
We did.
I was tired of, you know, having girlfriends and breaking up. And I just was ready to meet someone and settle in. And so we're on the canoe. And it's funny because the person in the back of the canoe steers the canoe. And to this day, I cannot remember who was in the back of the canoe.
Neither can I.
We can't remember who was sitting where and who was steering the canoe, which I think is kind of symbolic because we both steer the relationship.
They were late getting there in their train left without him, so they had train masters in them days. So the girls said that, oh, what are we going to do? And the train master said, I'll take care of you girls. Here, I'll put you on this next train, and you're going to like this next train. And Brittany says, she says to him,
oh, a train's a train.
A train's a train, yeah. He says, no, this one's different. So we put the two girls on the train with 2,000 sailors.
Nothing but white hats. We walked on and the train is filled with nothing but men in white hats. That's all you could see.
But they happened to get on a car with a Screwy Louie and myself. My friend, Screwy Louie. His name was Bernard Lewis. And we called him Louie. And I called him Screwy Louie because he was always doing something, screwy. But, anyway, we jumped up to give the girls our seat, you know? And, everybody, of course, jumped up. And I don't know why the girls picked us. Why did you pick us?
Because your seat was closest.
Oh, because seat was closest. Anyway, so I come back from overseas on the 8th day of May, 1945.
We had our first kiss.
Our first kiss, yeah. And 11 days later...
We were married.
We were married.
We really fell madly in love right away. It was wild. It was crazy. It felt like I was falling into this great big blue sky of sunshine. It was just so deep, you know, to look into Davina's eyes and be like, wow, I'm madly in love with you.
Do you guys want kids?
No.
Sort of?
Sort of, yeah. I think Andy would be an amazing father. And I work with a lot of kids right now. I don't need to have my own. It's nice to send them home to their parents. And as far as the drive to be a parent of my own, I don't have that very strongly right now. That could come, but it hasn't come yet.
Yeah, sometimes I feel like I really want to have kids, but sometimes I feel like I'm so young myself that I'm not ready for that, that we're not ready for that. Also, I feel like there's so many children in the world already. Kinda, as an environmentalist, I feel like there's so many people in the world. But there's also a lot of kids who need, like, a supportive family, so I guess I'm open to the idea of adopting children.
One day, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's who would really benefit from being raised in a better place. But we'll see. We'll see what the future brings.
Yeah, that's not like a hot topic in our relationship, or it's not something we talk about a lot. Only when people ask us, especially now since we're getting married, they're like, what about kids?
Like, oh, we don't know.
Yeah, not anytime soon for us. I mean, I travel a lot, I go on tour a lot with dance, and he travels a lot for research, so he can't even really have a dog or a kid.
But a cat is okay.
Yeah.
They're okay for a little while.
We get cats at our house.
I was probably better at house cleaning. And driving. She was better at... she liked to cook. So did I, so we sort of shared that one. We did a lot of stuff together. We made the bed together and, you know, stuff that where it was easier to do with two people than just one. And we shared pretty much. Oh, she took over all the bookkeeping, which left me very confused when she died. I've only lately gotten things straightened out.
I've had a career as an English teacher in high school, as an ESL teacher, and as a medical transcriptionist. My biggest passion is bread baking. I love to bake sourdough bread, and I'm learning how to bake crackers, flatbread. So that's a lot of fun for me.
Well, I've had a career as a rabbi for 45 years, and retirement isn't a matter of not being able to say anything. Retirement is being able to say anything you never had before in your 45 years, and that is the word no. Rabbi, will you do this? No. It's great, I can say no.
Things aren't exactly rosy in Romania. They'd gone through a revolution that had thrown out the communist dictator and his wife, and things were rather bleak, but there was food, but not a lot of food, and before we went to the orphanage each visit, we'd stop at the local market and buy a crate full of...
One of the nurses said that the kids having bananas was like having Christmas, because they rarely got fresh fruit. So we bought this huge bushel basket of bananas, $7, and took it to the orphanage. And the nurses were so excited about it, and they had the kids sit down at their little tables, and they were all... with their hands
just
crossed,
so well behaved,
elbows down on the table, and because they didn't have bananas on a regular basis, they'd grab the banana and bite into the skin. So we showed them how to peel the bananas down and showed them how to eat them. And at the end, there was this little girl who stood up and sang us a thank you song in Romanian.
And I was like, I want you too! Actually, there wasn't one child in that orphanage, there were 56 kids, there wasn't one child that I didn't want to take home, and they would all come running out to you, swarming, want hugs and kisses.
They were all working on Lesbian Woman. Right in that book, which was such a classic, and you know, broke new and wonderful ground.
I asked my boss if I could get 2 weeks off, because Dell and I, we wanted to go... We had a cabin up by Jenner, up by Guerneville, and we wanted to go up there and write a book. And he said, why don't you take a month? So we did, and we each took our typewriters. She used a manual, I had an electric, and we went up to our little cabin for a month. And when one of us ran out of whatever, we'd switched, and so on. And at the end of the month, we came up with a document, what do you call it?
A manuscript?
Manuscript, thank you. And then we gave it to Sally, because Sally was a university
English teacher
professor. So we figured she could catch all the goofs and so on. And you went through it, and you didn't make a lot of changes. As I recall, the most things you did, you took out all the exclamation points.
I did.
And we had a lot of them.
Mm, that's right.
We put them all back afterwards.
You sure did.
Anyhow.
Yeah, and I collected my first paycheck in San Francisco from Phyllis and Dell for that work. $350.
We paid you?
You paid me, yes.
My God.
Yes, I should have kept the check.
And when did you know that she was the one for you?
Pretty much right away, that first day. I mean, I don't usually see people's auras when I meet them. I'm not like, woo! I mean, only two people in my life has that happened to me, and I'm the first person I was in a relationship for a while, and that didn't work. So I knew by the end of that day. I felt like this person could be my partner is what I felt like.
So kind of love at first sight?
Kind of, yeah.
Do you still see her aura?
No, I see a lot of other stuff, but not her aura.
17 years.
The aura's dead.
Okay, but I mean, we both have never been in a long-haul thing.
It's a long haul.
It's a totally different thing. When you have kids, your focus is really different. You kind of,
your relationship is put on the back burner to a certain extent.
Good morning, morning, hello sunshine, wake up sleepy head, why'd you move that bojangle clock so far away from them? Just one more minute, that's why you moved it, one more hug or two, do you love waking up next to me, as much as I love waking up next to you. You make the coffee, I'll make the bed, I'll fix your lunch, you'll fix mine. Now tell me the truth, do these old shoes look funny? Honey, it's almost 9. Now you be careful, gotta go, I love you, have a beautiful day, and kiss the happiest girl in the whole USA. Simply do the thank you, Lord, for making him for me. And thank you for letting life turn out the way I always thought it should be. There once was a time when I could not imagine how it would feel to say, I'm the happiest girl in the whole USA. Shine on me, sun, shine, walk with me, world, it's a skimpity-doo-da-day. I'm the happiest girl in the whole USA.
I'm the happiest girl in the whole USA.
We're in the airport in San Diego, and it's packed with people. And Maben's standing still organizing the bags, and I said, watch the boys. Well, he thought I said, I'm taking the boys. And they had their little wheelie bags, and they've got their teddy bears on their arms and their little wheelie bags, and they're walking through the terminal, not a care in the world. They're following me. I don't know that they're following me. I think they're with him. So Alexandru comes out, Maben comes out, and he says, where's Nicholas? I go, I have no idea. I thought he was with you. So I run into the terminal, and it was like, you couldn't see anybody. It was like slow motion. Nicholas!
Worst fear every parent
has. It's like
has.
The parting of the seas. All the people just parted, and I could see Nicholas down the aisle, and he turns around, looks at me, and goes, hi, Daddy. And it's like, you know, when your heart's up here, and you're just, oh my God, I'm a failure as a parent.
And it was funny. We were only married a short time. I got pregnant. Like I said, I wasn't very smart, but anyway. Bob says your aunts are going to be counting on their fingers, because that's how they do, you know. I said they can count all they want. It's still going to come out 10.5 months. They can count all they want. And sure enough, our daughter was born the 26th of March. We were married a year the 19th of May. So 10.5 months.
Yeah, but right now we're married 64 years and our daughter is 64.
Yeah, she was 64 March 26th.
I knew I really wanted to be pregnant. Rhonda knew she didn't, so that was really easy to decide. And we actually first started using Rhonda's brothers to try and get pregnant. That didn't work. I didn't get pregnant for about...
You tried it twice.
I would fly down to L.A. twice.
But then my brother didn't want to do it.
Yeah, then your brother didn't want to do
it
anymore.
It was wild, though. She had to, like, figure out ways to... You can use an ovulation predictor kit to figure out when you're ovulating. She had to jump on a plane to L.A., inseminate with one brother.
I know, it's really weird.
And then my other brother lives in San Diego.
I can't think about this too much.
So then she had to rent a car, drive down to San Diego, and the next morning inseminate with my other brother.
Yeah, I can't think about this too much.
Sorry, so my brother has...
This one starts the same way.
My younger brother, little of the two brothers, has...
He's a funny guy.
He makes this joke where he handed her a cup and said, freshly squeezed.
God, Rhonda.
Okay, so Daddy and Nicholas are changing Kira's diapers.
No!
I think I just come up back from school, I'm not sure.
No!
But, and I come up the stairs. I come up the stairs, and all of a sudden, I hear Dad asking Nicholas to go get a wet wipe. Right, a wet wipe. So he reaches for a wet wipe, and Kira shoots when Father holds Kira's legs
in
up.
That movement of Kira's legs flying up and compressing on her stomach.
She shoots 15 feet across the room.
Right where Nicholas was standing.
And Nicholas drops the diaper and goes, I don't wanna! I don't wanna!
So, to this day, Nicholas has never changed a diaper. Nicholas, what are you gonna do when you have kids?
I don't know.
He's gonna say, I don't wanna! I don't wanna!
Good job, Kira.
Since I actually gave birth, maybe I'll give the answer. We actually tried to have a baby for, 3 years, and it was very difficult, and I don't really know the reason why, but I actually visited a fertility specialist in San Francisco. We were living in Oakland at the time, so when I got pregnant, I was like on cloud 10. I was so excited. I don't know how graphic you want us to get, but...
No, we don't need to get graphic.
It was very exciting to have our first child, our son Aaron, and he now lives in San Francisco. It was just, you know, something that we were very excited about having, so...
I think that, I mean, you cry and there are all kinds of tears, but when a child is born, there is crying like you've never experienced out of such, just awesome joy. It's just awesome to have a child, and it's absolutely mind-boggling, and it's your child, and you look at this and you say, oh my God, it's a miracle. It's just a miracle, and I mean, this child is gorgeous. I mean, whew, what a baby. Just absolutely beautiful. And my daughter, differently. I told him, please, you've got the wrong one. I've told him that's not mine. But then I had to claim her because she looked like my father.
When he didn't have his teeth in.
But Aaron, my firstborn, I mean, whew, oh, just what a beautiful child. And my daughter today, she's the apple of my eye.
She was the cutest kid in the world.
When was it that we saw the doctor that inseminated her?
Oh, yeah, that's really funny. I don't know when that was.
We had a doctor at Kaiser. They do in-uterine insemination, so
you get pregnant more likely. It's cool.
They put the sperm exactly into the uterus, so it doubles your chances of getting pregnant. And so the doctor was this really nice guy, you know, really friendly and stuff. And so when I think Kira was a baby or something.
Yeah, she was little.
And we were at some party or something, and there he was. This doctor who inseminated her and his wife. He's there with his wife, and I just, when I saw him, it just came out of me. It's just, you're the guy that got my wife pregnant. His wife's like...
We were laughing. We thought it was so
funny. She got it
funny.
Right away, though, that it was a medical procedure.
That's funny.
Yeah, we thought it was really funny.
That's really funny.
When we first moved up into the block, Fred came in, and he wasn't even in kindergarten yet, and he said the F word. My hair stood up. I said, Fred, come here. I said, you know Mommy and Daddy, we swear. He said, yes. I said, have you ever heard Mommy and Daddy say that word? No. I said, so it must be a dirty, filthy, rotten, nasty, foul, disgusting word. I don't want you to say it again. Okay. 2 days later, he comes in and he says to me, Mommy, do you know that dirty, filthy, rotten, nasty, foul, disgusting word that you don't want me to say? I said, yeah. Jimmy says it, but he had to give me every, you know, dirty, filthy, rotten, nasty, foul, disgusting word so I would know which one. Yeah.
Yeah. He was a character. Freddy was a character.
Yeah.
I think the desire to have kids has really nothing to do with one's sexual orientation.
I hated being pregnant. I did not like being pregnant. I did not.
She was sick.
I got sick. I didn't like it. But I loved giving birth. I would give birth again in a second if I could skip the 9 months of being pregnant. There's just something really magical about it. I think I'm good at it. My body is just good at giving birth. And, Kira, they both got started. The labor both started at 6 a.m. in the morning.
Around the same exact time.
Something.
6:23.
Yeah, I don't remember.
6:19 and 6:26.
Yeah, I don't remember. But then Kira got stuck. I had back labor, and it was a full moon in October, and there were more births than ever at Kaiser, and she got stuck. And I mean, I never thought I'd have a cesarean.
In fact, we were in the birthing class.
I went to the bathroom during that
Yeah,
time.
She's like, I don't need to hear about this. This isn't going to happen to me. So she just like, I just took off and went to the bathroom.
I didn't even listen.
So she labored both times pretty easily to 10 centimeters pretty quickly.
But then Kira got stuck.
And she got stuck and it ended up being an emergency C-section for her.
But I'll never forget it. Because, you know, here's Kira, right? And they brought your little head around and I couldn't believe it. I fell in love like instantly. Instantly. It was amazing. And then Sonia, I was able to have her naturally, which was great, although it really hurts. So Sonia, you came out, and you looked... Oh, and I was saying, Sonia needs to be early, and she needs
so
to be small.
So she can come out right.
And she was early, and she was a little bit, she was 6'7", so she was a little bit small. So Sonia, you came out pretty easily, and I just got a hold of her, and you looked all, you're kind of all scrawny, and you look like a little blue chicken, remember?
Sonia, the blue chicken.
I know. So, you know, it's the most amazing experience. I think for me, I was actually feeling this connection with all these women on the planet. I can't believe all these women have had babies. I mean, it's hard. It's big, you know, and millions of people, millions of women do this all the time.
I love you, she whispered in his ear on a summer's day. I love you, he whispered in her ear on a summer's day. I love you, won't you stay with me forever? I love you, won't you stay with me forever?
Summer dress and soulless shoes, naked face and a beaming smile. She loves you, won't you stay with her forever? She loves you, won't you stay with her forever?
Faded suit, no business shoes, tangled hair and a crooked smile.
Laugh in the rain and cry in the sun. Hate who you love and love who you hate. Love, it makes no sense to me, but it's clear when you're next to me.
Smile when you're sad and frown when you're happy. Open your mouth, but you don't know what you're saying. Love, it makes no sense to me, but it's clear when you're next to me. I love you, she whispered in her ear on a summer's day. I love you, she whispered in her ear on a summer's day.
Love, it makes no sense to me, but it's clear when you're next to me.
When I was as far as I can remember, when I was a lot younger, like less than 10, I used to have dreams of my classmates, and I was either rescuing them, and these were all guys, or we were doing adventure things together, stuff like that.
Someone help save me, I'm drowning!
Here, Timmy, take my hand!
Thank you for saving my life.
Danger is my middle name.
And I never had dreams or thought about the girls in my class, and it was somewhere around age 12 or 13 that the penny dropped, and I started thinking, I guess, as much as I didn't want to, or I thought maybe it was going to be temporary or I'd grow out of it, I started to realize, no, this is who I am. I'm attracted to guys. I'm not attracted to girls. Yeah, are you shocked? So it was pretty early. I started my first relationship when I was 14 with another guy. Even though it was very secretive and neither of our parents knew about it, I was pretty convinced by then. I knew it was going to ruin any political career that I had aspired towards at that early point in my life, but I figured it was worth it.
That was unacceptable.
That's unacceptable. You're weighing in on this, Kira.
No, because you said the blah, blah, blah girls.
I love girls.
No, you don't. You wouldn't marry a girl.
No, I married a guy.
Why?
Why? Because I like guys.
Well, then it's not fair.
Well, they are two different things. You can love someone, but also if you want to live with them, then you want to live in love with the person that's right for you, and the person that's right for me is Daddy.
Not me?
Well, honey, you're my daughter.
I know, but I...
We've talked about that. As much as you want to marry one of us, we've told you, it just isn't going to work out that way. You have to go off and find your own person.
Never mind. No more questions.
Okay.
I think it was about fifth grade. I was in gymnastics, and I noticed that I had a crush on my gymnastics coach. And it wasn't like, I didn't have this reaction of like, it's going to be so weird if my gymnastics coach sees this play. It wasn't like, oh my god, I'm gay. It was kind of like natural. It was like what excited my body and what excited my mind. Men. And I didn't really have a kind of internal freak out about it. But there was definitely a very quiet hiding of it, like, put this in the back part of myself, not the part that I show the world. So yeah, fifth grade. Nine years old?
Well, I must have been a little different as a kid, because people would, like, call me gay or identify me as that, even though I didn't identify as, like, oh, I'm 100% gay. Because I remember in seventh grade, no, I was in eighth grade, and there was a group of seventh grade boys who were like, oh, Andy's gay, and oh, blah, blah, blah. And I remember thinking, like, that was so wrong for, I mean, recognizing at that age, like, so what if I am, you know, like, so what if I am? So I remember waiting for them, because I think I also had this intuitive sense that it was something they were scared of. So I remember waiting for them as they were coming back from the cafeteria on this bench, and then I'd, like, cross my legs, and I was like, hey, boys. And they were like, ah, and they all ran away. I guess it was sort of like a young gay pride thing, you know? I mean, I was just thinking, you know, you can call me this name, but I know that you're just scared, and I'm not. And if I am gay, then, you know, so what?
At one point, I was called into the office of the president of the Christian college that I was teaching at in Texas. And he sat behind a desk, and he had behind him a picture of Solomon's head of Christ. And the president, he said to me, Dr. Gearhart.
Dr. Gearhart.
I hate to ask you this question.
I'd hate to ask you this question.
But it's absolutely essential that I know.
But it's absolutely essential that I know.
Are you a homosexual? And I said, no!
No!
And the head of Christ went, just like that, right at me, you know? So it was real clear my Savior Jesus was saying, you have just lied, girl, you really have.
You have just lied, girl, you really have.
I came into Aaron's room and I said, Aaron, how, you know, we were talking about his year in France. I said, how was it? Did you meet any girls? And he said, nope. And I said, did you meet any guys? And he broke out crying, just started sobbing. And I said, Jerry, get in here, we need to talk. And we all sat on the floor and Aaron is crying, crying, crying. And I said, honey, I said, it's fine, we love you. And he said, you know, Mom, I thought you would throw me out of the house. And he said to me, he said, Mom, when I found out that I was gay, I felt nauseated because society makes people feel that it's so bad. And, I mean, we were in such pain for him.
I'm in the office, and I hear this crying. So I go in from the office, and I look at him, and I say, oh, my God, I said to Joy, he's home 3 hours, and you got him crying already. What's going on? And then he told us that he was gay, and I slid right down the wall and just started sobbing. And he said to me, he said, I thought that you would be like all of the parents of my friends who kicked them out of the house. Well, that really just floodgates. And I said to him, I said, we loved you at breakfast. Do you mean to tell me at lunch we're not going to love you anymore? And we just embraced each other and just hugged for such a long time, just sobbing and sobbing.
No, tell your longer story.
No, I did that yesterday.
No, they should know, because, I mean, if they're going to do a whole play on it, they should know that coming out is really painful and awful, and it can make you feel terrible.
I should tell the whole miserable coming out story.
Well, tell part of it.
Okay. Well, so I had a boyfriend at the time, and I really kind of started to wish he was someone else. In particular, there was a female that I wished that he was, and
He wasn't, and it was pretty rough, actually, you know. I started drinking because it was weird, you know. Like, I tried to drink it away, but it didn't go away. And I thought about killing myself because it was just so uncomfortable. And I started smoking, you know, just all these bad habits that a lot of young gay people pick up to cope and whatnot. And, you know, it's still happening. So I was outside and I was smoking. And I remember just suddenly having this weird conversation with God. Like I didn't talk to God. Like, that was a new thing that was suddenly happening. I just remember having this conversation, like, what's up with this? You know, like, why did you make me this way? And then I guess it was like, oh, wow, you know, like, I got made this way. This is the way God made me. I didn't choose this. This is the way God made me. And if God made me this way, you know, if this is the way I'm supposed to be, then I figure I've got two choices, right? I can kill myself and just be done with it, or I can accept myself and realize that this is a part of myself that's something bigger that I don't really understand right now, but that this is who I am. So at first I was like, all right, you know, I'll just say I'm bisexual. Like, that's cool, you know. But then I was like, well, then why do I have to drink to kiss my boyfriend? Like, that's not bisexual. That's like someone who's gay, who's still with her boyfriend, and it's really not supposed to be that way. So I broke up with him. I stopped drinking, and I met this girl, and I started dating her, and I was like, yeah, I'm totally gay, you know, and I just came out to everyone, you know, came out at my high school, everywhere, and, you know, after that, I didn't look back.
I can remember this day, like, perfectly. I have a horrible memory about this day. I can remember it really well. I was outside playing with my friends, and, you know, they called us in for dinner, like they ordinarily would. And then it was like this very serious mood, you know? And we all sat down. Because we sat down for dinner every night. My mom would cook. Like, it was very, like, traditional in a lot of ways. And my mom, I think, said, well, you know, we have something we need to talk with you guys about, me and my sisters. And they told us that my dad was going to be moving out because he was gay. And I remember just being like, so upset. Like, I think I even threw something. Like, I threw a glass, I think is what I did, and just kind of, like, ran down the hallway because, you know, kind of like I said before, the double whammy, like this. Okay, my parents are getting divorced. My dad is gay. Like, my life is over, you know? I was just, like, certain of it. And so that was when I found out. And it was really sweet. I can remember my older sister coming to, like, comfort me, and my mom and my dad both just, like, really trying to be there for me, even though it was, you know, kind of a hard moment at that time for our family. And we had a lot of, like, extended family that really came through for us. And even though I wasn't able to be open with my friends about it, I did, you know, feel very much supported. Like I said, my sisters and my mom, my dad too. So, yeah, it was hard. Like, I boycotted BLTs for, like, the next 10 years because that was what we ate at that meal. I just remember being like, I'm never eating a BLT again. I know it's silly. It's totally silly, but it was just, you know, a pretty intense thing at that time. So that's how I found out.
It just doesn't make sense. Like, everyone's a person, you know? And, like, instead of saying, like, oh, I like guys or I like girls or whatever, just say you like people, you know? And, like, well, one of my friends, like, not really a friend, but, like, we're not friends anymore because of the whole Prop 8 thing. Like, you know, she knew I had two moms, and she was, well, pretty cool with that. She came over a couple times. And then I heard that she was, like, really anti-gay at school and stuff. And we weren't going to the same school anymore. So I asked her about it. Like, so, you know, I have two moms and everything. And I kind of wanted to understand her reasoning. And I was still kind of young, so I was maybe not as polite as I could have been. But she told me, like, my family was disgusting and stuff, and it's like,
who is this?
Jenna.
It's like, they're people, and it's just, yeah.
Yeah, that's just a little painful as a parent to hear that your kids are having to go through that kind of prejudice when it's not them. But, you know, a lot of people deal with prejudice in the world, so I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing to learn what that feels like, because you can relate to what other people go through. And I mean, I also know that our kids have to come out all the time. I mean, that's just been, they have to come out about their families a lot, and that takes a lot of bravery.
They can't hide that they have two moms.
Yeah, you know, or you can, but that takes energy.
And we don't want you to hide that.
No,
yeah, at all. Yeah, ever.
But if it's a lot to say sometimes, I mean, it is something you have to say. It's not the regular family that people picture and expect. We always have to come out. I have to come out at school a lot, which I never used to as a teacher. I never used to be out. But then I wouldn't be out, and kids would be talking about something about rights or different people, and kids would say to me, you know, I've never met someone gay before. What are gay people like? And I'd be thinking, oh my gosh, you know me so well.
And she couldn't say.
And I was scared to come out. And now I don't care anymore. And I do care. I care enough to come out so kids can just realize they know someone gay.
But I was much more scared to be that open with, like, my family. I was more scared of, like, my brother and my dad and their kind of homophobia. Like, I remember them telling homophobic jokes and being like, wow, you know, they think this is this horrible, disgusting thing, and it's something that you laugh about and joke about that's, you know, other, that's, like, gross or whatever it is. So that was really hard for me because I'm much more invested in being loved by my brother and my dad, so the idea of them thinking of me in this negative way was much more scary than some random person. But they were both really, really, really sweet and supportive when they found out. Like, I remember when I had my first boyfriend, my dad came to me and was like, you know, I know about you and art and whatever, you know, whoever you are, I love you.
I remember getting into college and just thinking, like, this isn't really fair. Like, I can't hide this part of my life and hide this aspect of my family. Like, how do you move forward with your friendships when you're hiding such an important piece of your own personal history? I remember writing letters to a couple of my closest girlfriends and just telling them in a letter, which is kind of wimpy, you know, I'm really sorry I never told you this, you know, but my dad is gay, and, you know, I had all these feelings about it, and I'm sorry I never told you, and I'm sorry if it, you know, affected our friendship in a bad way or whatever. And, like, all of them called me right away when they got my letter and said, like, it's not a big deal, you know, like, we've known since, you know, we're 15 years old, like, it's nothing, like, we don't care. And I thought that was really sweet.
So I started getting these love notes coming to me that I couldn't tell who they're from. And at first I'm asking my boyfriend, I'm all like, Shane, are you sending me emails? And he's like, no. And this is like literally when the email internet was just invented and it was like this new thing and people could send you email and you couldn't tell who it was from. So I'm like, who's sending me these emails? These really beautiful, poetic emails are so beautiful. And at the same time, I started to get to know this woman who had, you know, kind of short hair, kind of athletic, and she was actually sleeping next to me at the vigil, so I had her on one side and my boyfriend on the other. And I don't really remember how it all started coming around, but I started being like, oh my god, Heather is emailing me. Those emails are from Heather. And then being like having fun with like the mystery of it all, you know, is it her? Is it not her? It's probably somebody else. Who could it be? And so we were sleeping, like, right next to each other, and one night we kept on getting closer and closer, and I think I put my hand in her hand, like, pretending I was sleeping, and then she held my hand, and we were sleeping, like, right next to each other, and we kept on getting closer and closer and talking and stuff, and then all of a sudden we started kissing, and then my alarm went off, and it was, like, 5 a.m, and I had to go work at the student cafe. So the whole way down, I'm just like, oh, my God, oh, my, I can't believe I just kissed a girl, oh, my God. God, and, you know, I was right. It was Heather. I was right. So anyways, the whole day my head's just like in the clouds, and she comes in to get her coffee, and I'm like, hi.
Hi.
And she's like, hi.
Hi.
And I was fully just melting, just, oh my God. And so we started hanging out, and I was still really closeted. I was really politically active. I was, like, vice president on school. And so I kind of went back and forth with her, like, I can't be gay, I don't know, blah, blah, blah. And my Catholic roommate from my first year got whiff of this somehow.
And she called your parents, right?
And she called my parents.
And said?
I don't know, something's going on with Molly.
I don't know, something's going on with Molly.
She's hanging out with a girl that looks like a boy. And I think something's definitely going on, and you guys should know. So...
And then your parents made you move home, right?
So they call me at the cafe, and they're like, oh, do you want to do dinner? Because they lived about 45 minutes away, and I was like, oh, okay, sure. And I didn't pick up on anything, and I was like, free dinner? Cool. You're going to come get me? Okay, great. So Heather was there when my parents came to pick me up, and I was like, oh, okay, I'll see you later. And I get in the car, and my mom's like, who's that? And I'm like, that's a friend of mine. And she's like, how do you know her? And I'm like, through the women's center. And she's like, why are you hanging out at the women's center? And I'm like, because I believe in equal rights, whatever, mom. So we get to the restaurant, and it's this big Italian restaurant with really high ceilings, and there's this baritone guy singing opera, like, bleh, 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 really loud.
Bleh, 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 bleh.
We
We sit down. This is how my mom is. She's so impatient. We sit down. We barely get the menus open. I get my menu up. All of a sudden, she reaches across the table and she pulls it down and she's like,
All right, Nikki called us. Now you have to tell us the truth. Are you pregnant? Are you gay? What's going on?
And I'm just so... Oh my God, and my parents are both very involved in my life, and I've always done everything they wanted me to do, so this was like, oh my God, and I'm like, well,
I'm not pregnant.
I think I might, it could be, I don't know, but it, and I couldn't get it out, so I had to say it really loud, and I was like, I think I'm gay!
Gay,
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 gay.
And the guy stopped singing. It, like, echoed literally all the table. Everyone looks over. My mom stands up and looks at my dad and says,
You've always had those tendencies. This is your fault.
And he stands up and he's like, We're not having this discussion right now. And I get up and I'm like, I'm getting out of here. So I get up and running towards the door. My mom's right behind me. Oh, no, you don't come back here. Come back here. And I run into the bathroom trying to shut the stall to get her out. And she's pushing on the door like, you cannot shut me out. I am your mother. You are not gay, you know, get out here, we're gonna have a talking to, and she's just shaking me, being like, you know, you are not gay, I know gay people, and you are not gay, and why would you throw away everything, your whole, everything we've ever given to you, you don't know what you're getting yourself into.
Fight your demons.
Yeah, well, she told me that after, they grounded me, and they're like, oh, you're gonna live at home now for a while, and only go to school for classes.
You were already 19?
Oh, yeah.
You were over 18.
I was 19.
And you were grounded?
But it's your family, and so it's like...
You were grounded.
I was totally freaked out, and I'd be at home, and I'd start thinking about Heather, and I'd wait until like 1 o'clock in the morning, and I'd call her, and my mom comes in, and her hair is all crazy, and she'd be like, get off the phone. I know who you're talking to. Fight your demons. You'll thank me later. All this stuff. Big drama, but, you know, bottom line is, you know, Heather was my first love, and, you know, you can never stop loving someone, and, you know, when your parents tell you, absolutely, I forbid you, you're like, I am my own individual person, and I have the right to live my life and love who I want to, and my parents cannot decide everything in my life for me!
But, you know, the good news is that...
So, what I end up having to do is, my mom would call, where are you, where are you? I'm not coming home, I'm staying at my house. No, no, you're coming home. No, no, I'm not. And I pulled the phone cord out of the wall and I was like, I am not taking your calls! So we had no conversation for like 6 weeks, which was a really big deal because we used to talk practically every day, so no conversation. And one day I come home and my mom's sitting on my front steps and she's crying and she's like, I don't want to lose you. I love you. I accept you for who you are. I love you for who you are. And I'm willing to accept you for who you are. And it was really wonderful and really helpful. And now whenever I tell the story, she's so embarrassed and so supportive. And she actually does a lot of good for other gay people. Like, I'll find out from other gay people, like, oh, yeah, your mom's emailing me and helping me come out to my parents. And she doesn't even tell me she's doing these things. She just does them to be a great person in the world. And again, it's a great story to show how much your parents can change.
Between our broken hearts, 'cause I'm on the moon dreaming about you, and you're on the lake dreaming about me too. So baby, I need you to think realistically. Honestly, what could we be? And baby, I need you to think realistically. Honestly, could we really be? Sunflower on the side of the moon, so when you look up, you'll see my sunflower bloom at the stars will line up, boy, come undone, as we take another spin around the sun. So, baby, I need you to think realistically. I mean, honestly, what could we be? And baby, I need you to think realistically. Honestly, could we really be?
We were in a theater in England.
This is one. This is funny. We were watching, I think it was Phantom of the Opera or something.
Yeah. And I put my arm around Maven and this elderly couple that were about two or three rows up, threw little Skittles or something at the back of my head.
First you thought somebody had dropped something.
Yeah. And I turned around and I looked at them and they were a little antsy. And as soon as the show was over, they were up and out of their seats and gone. And I thought, you know, wow, that's really amazing.
Well, it's sort of that typical English way of disapproving. I mean, they weren't rude or vocal about it. They were just...
throwing your Skittle at somebody, that's pretty rude.
It's pretty tame. It's not like some of the other things that have gone on. It's sort of like, you know, tisk, tisk, and they throw their candy at you.
I mean, people weren't, like, throwing things at us or, like, writing hate mail or anything. But there was just sort of, you know the feeling when you know people are talking about you? There was that, and that, in my mind, was almost worse, you know, because you just sort of feel like an outsider. Yeah, I guess just expecting that people wouldn't want to be my friend or wouldn't want to come over to hang out at my house, you know, at my dad's house or something like that. I expected a whole lot more of that than actually existed.
And through the whole process of planning our wedding and stuff, like, sometimes we were met with support and other times we weren't.
We were really given the icy shoulder,
like,
we don't want you here.
Get out of here.
Or they'd be like, oh, okay, so you're the bride and you are the... who? And then we finally found this place. It was outside in this big forest, and there was this guy with, like, no shirt on and shorts on watering this beautiful garden, and he was so mellow and kickback and cool, and we were like, okay, totally, we're gonna get married here. It's beautiful here, it was outside, but even him, he was like, alright, so this is gonna be our first gay wedding.
You guys are all gonna have your clothes on, right?
Everyone's gonna be wearing clothing, right? And we're like, are you serious? Are you serious? Like, it's a wedding.
It was very weird.
A wedding.
Yeah, like, a wedding.
What about that would be naked for you? But, again, it's just, you know, people's whole conception around what it means to be gay or lesbian. We really just confronted it at every turn, and so we're doing the wedding cake together, and the woman kept saying...
Birthday cake. You want your birthday cake, right?
No, it's a wedding cake.
No, wedding cake. Birthday cake? Okay.
It was just, like, ways in which we really had to make our own.
This cake right here, don't put happy birthday on it.
And you won't believe this, but in my hometown, the real estate man had a slogan, never let a day go by. Of course, Italians were Dagos, so they couldn't buy a house in Butler. Never let a day go by, okay? Yeah, so highly prejudiced against Italians. When I was very young, when I was your age, I did not have one Italian friend. None, ever, at the time.
You were a loser.
Yeah. Not one at the time. Not one, okay? But now I attract them. Like a magnet.
We grow on you like a fungus.
And then Kira wrote that article and they printed letters back saying that we were brainwashing her, and it was so ugly and so painful.
Somebody wrote a letter comparing you guys to fruit.
To what?
To fruit.
What does that mean?
It was like something about, like, if two oranges get married, it doesn't work. Like something totally, like, bizarre about fruit. And I was like, they're not fruit, they're people. It's ridiculous.
The language that was being used, it was widespread amongst the servicemen. You know, the language, queers, fags, and words I guess I have forgotten. I can't even remember all the words that they used, you know? But, the terminology that they would use when there was a homosexual that was beat up and maybe he was robbed or something. You'd read it in the paper, you'd hear it on the news, and the terminology they use is, oh, that guy was just rolling a queer, and putting it out there like it was a everyday news, you know? They were just rolling a queer.
I was holding hands with a boyfriend once, walking through San Francisco. And you think San Francisco's like a really progressive gay city. I mean, it is. It is. There's so many gays in San Francisco. But there was some teenage boys who were heckling us like, "You better hold each other's hands, faggot. We're gonna kick your ass, faggot." We're just like, just walking down the street holding hands. And they actually threw a rock at, and it hit my boyfriend in the head. And it made me so angry. I wanted to smash heads on the pavement. But I didn't feel like I could do anything. Because, you know, there's more of them than us. And I'm really not a fighter. But, like, in that moment, the anger, like, I actually imagined myself smashing somebody's head on the pavement.
No one really cares at my school. Luckily, because it's elementary, everybody just kind of hears it, gets over it, and doesn't even think about it.
But, I've had a couple of times, you can close your ears, you don't need to hear this part. I've been called a dyke. One time I was just in a car, stopped at a light, and these guys in the truck next to me shouted out the window, "Hey, dyke, you know."
It's scary.
It is, yeah.
We were all in the closet. Everybody was scared out of their gourd, right? But there were these bars for both gay men and lesbians, and one in particular down in San Antonio, I remember, where we would go even separately in cars sometimes. 4 or 5 women here, and 4 or 5 men here. And we would go into the bar and have a really good time. And if the red light came on, we knew that the police were coming, so we'd stop dancing with the same sex partner and go over and dance with one of the guys. Or so, you know, when the police got there, people are going to come check out the place and see if it needed to be raided. We're all just nice heterosexual couples going around the dance floor. And when those fellas were out of the way, we could go back to dancing and carrying on with the members of the same sex. But this was back in the closet days, when nobody wanted to say who they really were.
In a place like this, how the
stinks.
What stinks?
Prop 8.
Prop 8. Oh, we get to talk about Prop 8 now.
That old thing.
The day of the election when Prop 8 actually passed, for me, it was such a slap in the face. It was such a... I was so annoyed.
I think it's really sad that other people feel like they need to make that decision for me, whether or not I can get married.
And it was taken away by popular vote, so that means that, you know, more than 50% of the people that vote in California think that our relationship doesn't deserve to be called marriage. And that's kind of hard, you know, that's kind of hard to swallow.
And then having, like, neighbors right next door and around the corner having these Yes on 8 signs and just having people, you know, knowing that your own neighbors, you know, are...
Don't even see you as human beings.
I feel very sad about the state of politics in the United States. It's not just about Prop 8. It's about money, what money can do to any campaign, whether it's, no matter what the issue is. We seem now to have become armchair voters based on how clever the ads are on TV, and that's not the way we should be running our country, based on popularity campaigns or the success or failure of some initiative. It's
because the general population can be so misled with those campaign ads.
Yeah, and how do you call them out on that without spending another $1 million on TV ads?
Then I got this flyer in the mail that was from the Prop 8 people, and it was sort of, it was a very slick flyer, and it was very well designed and had some really strong language on it, and I don't remember exactly what it said, but it was going on about how churches would be forced to support this, and how teachers would have to teach people that it's okay to be gay. And I remember thinking, you know, so what? It is okay. But it was designed in a way that was really compelling. It had some really strong language, and I was like, wow, you know, these people are organized. They have a lot of money and a really strong message. And I could see people being affected by that message, and it really scared me. I remember I was home alone that night, and I just held it in my hand and started crying.
I'm so glad they were all different. So my best friends these days are Mormons and Republicans who think queers are just terrible, you know? And they have to admit that we love each other, despite the fact that they think I'm sick. That's the other term. Criminal, sinful, sick. That's it. I'm sick. That's what they say, Phyllis, that we are.
Yeah, it's just funny to hear people talk about the sanctity of marriage and doesn't know how many heterosexual marriages are so unhealthy and how much divorce there is and how many people get drunk and go get married in Las Vegas on a whim, you know? It's like the sanctity of marriage in this culture is kind of a joke to me.
And here we have this relationship that is very, very committed and is very, very real, and that doesn't get the approval of society.
Yeah, I think it's... I feel angry about it, but not from... Of course I feel for the people that can't get married, but it's not from that personal level. I'm just kind of shocked that people in our society are so ignorant. Not of what it's like to be gay, but of just their own thought process. You know, I think that the way people understand or legitimize Proposition 8 as being okay is ridiculous. Like, we should not allow something based on the Bible or based on the sanctity of marriage, whatever the heck that means. If that's the case, we should outlaw, you know, divorce. If we're gonna lead that logic. And so it doesn't. It makes no sense at all. So I have a very strong sense of just aversion to that way of thinking, because it doesn't even hold up to its own logic, you know? And I think that that's stupid and ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Ridiculous, yeah. And I feel like it's, you know, we're like in this like time when eventually this is gonna be, you know, history, where we look back on it and say like, oh my gosh, remember when? Like, remember when gay people were so discriminated against and not given the same rights? So I'm hoping that that time comes soon and we can look back and be able to say that, like, what the heck? Like, you know, you can say, oh, women used to not be able to vote, or, you know, biracial or, you know, multiracial couples couldn't be together, or all of these things. Like, that's all history now. So it's kind of an interesting time where I guess we get to experience this now, but it just doesn't really make sense.
No, it makes no sense at all. And people, looking back, you know, we used to have slaves and I'm sure there was a huge group of people that were rationalizing it and saying, oh, we should all have slaves. We should have the freedom to have slaves. And that makes no sense at all, because it has nothing to do with I guess protecting the sanctity of something else.
And we were inspired in part by people who had challenged racist segregation by, like, sitting at a lunch counter. And, like, until someone sits down and doesn't get served, if everybody just walks around and just makes the assumption, like, okay, yeah, I'm African-American, I can't sit down at the lunch counter to be served. Like, the invisible discrimination that comes across that counter every day, it's no one even thinks about it, no one sees it. But sitting down or going over and saying, like, this is my beloved, we've been together for this many years, we are ready to commit to each other, we are taxpaying Americans, we are good citizens, and we want to get a marriage license here at our city hall. And at first they were like, they didn't even know what to say because they'd never said no to anyone before, because anyone can get married. I mean, as long as you're 18 years old, you could walk down and marry an 80-year-old person and no one's going to ask any questions, you know? Because anyone can get married. You don't have to live together, don't have to love each other, don't have to want children, don't have to believe in God. Nothing. Just two people can go down and get a marriage license.
We are so used to not touching each other in public. We never hold hands. If we do, you know, just kind of go like that. Or if we're around your friends, you know, different families we know, instead of kissing goodbye, I might just go like that. You know, we've changed who we are in so many subtle daily ways that we don't even realize it anymore. It's just you get so used to hiding and so used to being invisible. And I think that's why Prop 8 was the most painful thing for me, as I finally sat up and thought, I am sick of being invisible. I do not want to be invisible anymore.
I've got a rusty little bird cage around my heart. It keeps me safe behind its metal bars. I've got a rusty little bird cage around my heart. It keeps me safe behind its metal bars. That I'm talking about, they put a spring in her step and a sparkle in her eye.
'Cause girl, when you walk by me, the door flies open and those birds begin to sing those
silly little love songs. Resonate through my chest, make me want to sing and dance, like no one is around.
'Cause girl, when you walk by me, the door flies open and those birds begin to sing those
pretty little love songs. I got a rusty little bird cage around my heart. It keeps me safe behind its metal bars. It keeps me safe behind its metal bars.
I think that love is the universal quality that lies at the heart of all creation and that calls us to stand in it so that we're in love at all times, calling forth as well the respect and the affirmation of the great differences that there are among us. And if we're standing in love, you know, it'll be okay that we have differences. And if we're not standing in love, we go to war. That's it. What do you think?
Last week, Uganda voted that homosexuality is a capital offense and that they are to be put to death. And if you read the New York Times last week, just look it up, last week, there's a human rights organization that's really up in arms about this. And they say, well, where do you get this from? And they say most of it comes from the funding and influence of evangelical Americans.
In Uganda?
In Uganda.
Whoa.
New York Times last week.
Wow, I didn't know.
And that's when they voted to execute homosexuals.
in Yemen and other places, it's 14 years in prison. So that's the enraging thing. It's not the religion that's doing it. It's the perversion of a religious point of view. They take something that the Bible is supposed to promote and they demote the human condition.
People can use the Bible like a hammer. They use it like a weapon rather than trying to really understand it. And they never explored the context of what that was in Leviticus.
Right, yeah, the fear of the unknown, the fear of the different.
If you go and look at the Bible passages, or it talks about, you know, how it's not right, or it's a sin to be gay, you can find passages, even within some of the same books, that say things like, oh, you shouldn't wear fiber of one plant of cotton, say, with wool. So you can't wear wool and cotton clothes together. So in Leviticus, it talks about that. And I don't see anybody. There's no proposition, let's get rid of wool and blended fibers, you know? So why are people latching on to that one specific thing in a text that was written 4,000 years ago for a very specific audience? I think it's a little bit silly.
You don't have a choice. If your nature is to be heterosexual,
right,
you don't choose that.
No, you don't. But that's what I'm trying to
you
say.
You don't choose to be homosexual.
The question happens to be, does a gay person choose to be gay? And the answer is no.
Correct.
What judgment could be demanded of the wicked and reward conferred upon the righteous? Should not the judge of all earth do justly?
So what does that law apply to?
I can't, for instance, I cannot fulfill the laws that apply to only a woman. I just can't. I have no choice because I was born a male.
Yes.
Yes. Confirmed. And she, my wife, cannot perform the certain duties that apply to only men because she had no choice in becoming a female. Therefore, the laws only apply. Commandments, where you have a right to choose between obeying and not obeying, depend upon the ability of free choice. And that's what he says in the beginning. All of your human beings must have free choice. And if you do not have free choice, then the laws do not apply at all.
We lost Fred. That was a hard, hard time for both of us. And, you never get over it. You just accept it. But,
That's when Bernice went to work for the San Francisco.
The Giants.
The Giants, of course. It was minimum pay. She went to work as the usherette.
Of course.
Yeah, she spent more money at the park than she made. She would buy donuts for everyone in the park.
Yeah, but, it was good therapy for me because I had something else to think about. But I worked until 92.
Yeah, she worked there for 21 years from 1971.
71. 71, 92. But I had a lot of good times, made a lot of friends out there.
She hadn't been there very long before she was captain of the usherettes over there. She was an absolute natural. They called her the usherette from hell. I mean, she was murdered on these guys who'd go smoking marijuana and stuff and you in the park and...
Never smelt it before, but I knew it wasn't a cigarette, because I used to smoke. I thought, that doesn't smell right.
The hawk, they called her, the hawk.
Then I noticed the way that they were holding it. I never said anything, I just stood in front of them.
You'd be holding a cigarette, trying to hide it, and she'd come right along, and you'd be sitting in the aisle, and she'd stand right next to you and just stand there.
Till you burnt your finger.
Just stand there, and then you'd try to hold it down like this until it was burning out and burning into your finger. And she'd say, that's a warning. Smoke up again, and you're out of here. Yeah.
They used to swear at me, and I'd say, do you eat with that dirty mouth?
Oh yeah, do you eat with that dirty mouth? Yeah.
What do you miss about Del?
Her. I keep telling her that. In fact, this morning, I don't know if I was asleep and dreaming, or if I was awake and something was happening. Weird. But it was like she was in bed with me, and we were chatting or something. And I said, well, Del, I don't think that's so, and blah, blah, no, nah, what, whatever. And after a while, I think, wait a minute, she's dead. It was weird. Yeah, she was a wonderful, wonderful person.
Do you have any regrets?
My only regret is that she went and died on me.
Yeah.
She didn't seem to be very fair.
Right. Right.
I don't wanna go home.
It's not the place for me.
You know who you are,
what you're gonna
be,
but that's not
me.
I'm a wandering soul. I walk these streets alone.
say it's the place, you know who you are, what you're gonna be. But that's not me. I'm a wandering soul. I walk these streets alone. Dark, empty streets alone.
Proposed? In those days, who proposed? The man proposed.
And how?
And how? And how? Oh, and you mean and how? Okay, and how?
Do you remember? It's been a long time.
Well, you know, I...
You brought a ring to me.
I know I brought a ring.
To my little apartment in Berkeley.
Yeah, right.
And you said, will you marry me?
Just like that?
Well, you showed me the ring.
Oh, that's how it works.
I said, let me think for a minute.
Yeah, that's all it took.
We're out in the most beautiful field in Oregon, and I wasn't feeling very well, and we were in the tent, and Davina's like, don't you want to go on a walk in the moonlight? And I was like, no, I don't feel very well. And she's like, well, would you just come with me? Because I really want to go on a walk, and I don't want to go alone. And I was like, okay, fine. So... we're out in the field, and we're both kind of scaredy cats, especially Davina. So we thought we saw these, like, glowing eyes, and Davina's like, oh, is that a mountain lion? I think it was, like, a deer. And she brought out the most beautiful ring, and it was really dark, but there was, like, a full moon, and it just caught the glint of the diamond, and it was all sparkly. And she's like, you know, would you marry me? And I'm like, even though I was hinting at it, like, all of a sudden when that question gets asked of you, it's a big question. Like, whoa, you know, because I see marriage as a lifetime commitment, and, like, you know, here I am at 25 years old. Am I ready? Is this it? Is this really it? And I look at, you know, this beautiful sparkling diamond and Davina's shy, kind of hopeful look on her face, and I was just like, yes, let's get married. Let's do it.
I still grant myself the right to marry, so in my world, I can get married. And I will.
And I called her dad the next day and said, you know, Jim, I'd like to ask for your permission to marry...
And blessing.
And blessing to marry Molly. And he's like, well, what does that mean? Well, he didn't say it like that. He's like, well, what does that mean, you know? And I said, well, it means I want to spend the rest of my life with your daughter. You know, I want to take care of her and I want to share my life with her. And he's like, okay, sounds good.
So off the rack, I pick out a dress and, of course, they have to shorten it, you know.
I wonder why.
And we had invitations mailed out. Of course it was quick. Like I said, 11 days. It was still wartime, so you couldn't get champagne or anything like that. The booze that we finally did get, my uncle smuggled in. And, you know, for being Italians, nobody drank wine. Yeah, so then under the counter, my uncle hid the good stuff for the good relatives. The bummer ones got the beer or the water. And in those days, when you invited anybody to your wedding, the whole family came. From here, here, and in here. So they all came, and the kids are sliding all over the hardwood floors, and we were trying to dance and stuff. So our wedding, my mother made all the sandwiches and all the salads. We had, you know, we didn't have much money, and besides, couldn't buy a lot. So my mother made up the potato salad and the macaroni salad and all the sandwiches.
It's going to be my parents' place. It's out in the country. It should be pretty nice. It's going to be, I don't know, wine country casual.
Yeah, it's going to be really nice. His parents built their house out there, I don't know, in the past 10 years or so. And his dad built these, like, rock steps where he envisioned his sons getting married. So it's kind of cool that we get to, you know, get married there and have it at a place that's special. And my dad is going to walk me down the aisle.
We took the kids out for Mexican food or something that night, but it was an exciting day.
Yeah, so we got indigestion. The one thing that I thought was really cool is the county allowed the boys to sign our marriage certificate and be our witnesses, and Kira was the flower girl.
We got a call in 2004 saying, how would you and Dell like to get married? And we said, huh? What? She said, we're talking with Mayor Newsom about getting gay marriage okayed, and we would like you to be the first couple to get married. And we said, well, I guess we could do that. I don't know.
And they were like, yeah, the mayor. He'd only been in office for, like, 32 days, and they were like, he's totally changed the law, and he's going to let us get married. And it was like, oh!
So we went to the same people who had previously denied us
year after year, a license. Same.
They gave us a license.
Beaming from ear to ear, going like, oh, yeah, yes! And getting to see Phil and Dell, who are the founders of the lesbian movement, come out grinning from ear to ear in their little matching pantsuits and their marriage license.
Well, what are we going to wear? So, well, fortunately, we each had a new suit that neither of us had worn. So, that's what we wore. And a pantsuit, I should say.
And it was just, like, poetic justice. It was just beautiful, and it was, like, and it really got you to remember that, like, you know, efforts will pay off, you know? That things that seem like a really steep mountain, like, could totally just turn in an instant if a good person does the right deed. And we all got to, like, stand in line and witness each other getting married one after the other, and then people would come, you know, like our friends that have two babies that were in, like, Babies R Us, and they heard over the radio that, like, that Gavin was marrying gay people, and they ran down and brought the kids, and they just, like, they left the cart and came.
Yeah, and our friends from Davis.
And they've been together for like 36 years, and they were like jumping up and down, and they were so happy they could barely even contain themselves. They were giggling, and everybody was getting married, and it was just like, it felt like this heaven on earth moment of all these things you could want so much.
And the next day, I went down to pick up the paper at the foot of the stairs, and I brought it up and opened it up and said, oh my God, Dell, here's our picture on the front page.
You feel like, oh my God, you know, the world can change in an instant. Like, what seemed so impossible yesterday or like an hour ago is totally possible and happening right now.
Something in your eyes.
you're in the Navy, you would say things like fag and roll a queer. If you could go back to 1944 and talk to that young man in the Navy, what would you say?
If I knew then what I know now?
Yeah.
Yeah, what would you say to help that young man understand?
Well, I just have to say, Jesus, Bob, that's not nice. What the hell are you doing that for? Yeah.
Like I said, we have...
Jesus!
We have homosexual...
Thank Christ that, I'm not like that and have people picking on me.
I feel like I always had the seeds of acceptance within me. And it just hadn't... I had never had really such a close and prolonged interaction with somebody gay until I met her dad. Then that just allowed that to blossom. It was kind of like, oh yeah, well I always kind of suspected this is no big deal and this is just another person.
All it takes is a positive experience to understand that there is no threat from the gay community and that gay marriage is no different than any other marriage.
Yeah, I think so. Like, there's definitely certain subcultures that I might look down on and I have to stop myself and just, you know, realize they want the same thing that I want. Everybody wants to be happy and to be loved.
Do you guys ever dance together?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We do. Quite a bit. Yeah, quite often we go dancing in the morning around our kitchen. In our underwear.
Love. What is the definition of love? It starts out as lust, maybe.
Yeah, it's an itch that can't be scratched. Somebody told me that. I forget who it was. Do you know the definition of love? And I said, I think it's when you put somebody that you care about ahead of yourself. And he said, nah, it's an itch that can't be scratched.
And I say it starts out as lust, and then you realize there's something there past that, and that you genuinely care about this particular person.
My grandparents on my mother's side came from Italy, and when their boys got to be teenagers and they were going to go to bed, they'd stick out the hand to shake hands with their father. And my grandfather look at him and say, I'm your father, you kiss your father, you shake hands with your friends. And they went to their graves, up until the time that their grandfather died, but they taught their kids too. You kiss your father. And that's love.
Molly, what do you like about Davina?
Oh, no.
I like that she's really funny. Even when she's not trying to, she makes me laugh. And she's really smart. She's really kind. She's really caring. She's a beautiful person.
Davina, what do you like about Molly?
Everything, but her snoring.
I don't snore.
She's beautiful. She's extremely intelligent. She's very creative. She's an incredible singer. Beautiful voice. She's,
a good cook.
She's a good cook. She's very loving and tender. You know, she's good to our cats. She's very spiritual now, which is really great.
Thank you, baby.
Yeah, you're welcome. That's enough?
Yeah, that's plenty. You get an A+ for that.
And when we go to bed at night, it's more a question of, wow, you know? Look what you and I have done. And I look in his eyes and he looks in mine and it's like, yes, you know? We really are successful.
I think when people are closed, they miss the richness of life. And I think that I'm very grateful to have had a path like we've had. I think it has opened me up to the variety of life, not only in the human condition, but in the animal condition as well. I mean, when you start looking at animal life, you see the variations of partnerships and relationships as well as human life. So I think it's a shame that so many people are so closed and so bigoted. I think they lose. So for us, this has been a very loving experience. Very good.
What it boils down to is, I remember 1 month or 2 months ago, we were at a synagogue, and the rabbi said to us, thank you for having Aaron. You remember?
Yeah, right.
I wanted to say, you thank me for having Aaron. I thank God for having Aaron.
I can't tell you how amazing it was to come back from Hot Springs last week and look at Rhonda and think, I haven't really looked at her for a while. Wow, you know, this is the person who I'm spending my life with, and actually you were glowing. Maybe I saw your aura again.
Phyllis, I think we ought to have a group hug. Now, is that too la-la, California? I mean, is that like we're all supposed to be fruits and nuts out here? Does that sound too much like fruits and nuts? Well, no. Would you be willing to have a group hug with me?
Sure.
and I'm going to get between these two young women here. Because I'm a lesbian, right? I'm not, I'm really. I'm just teasing. I don't want you to be scared.
Would you be willing to be in a group hug with Jen?
I think we need to get out in the middle of the room.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think
I
need to figure that out.
We can do that.
Yes.
I have been sitting here too long.
I think we should get out.
I'm going to get between these two young women. Here, maybe because I'm a lesbian, right? I'm teasing. I don't want you to be scared, okay?
Feels like our heart is no place to be singing from at all.